Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Look at this beautiful old ruin.
Please don't refer to me like that.
This week on Walking the Dog, I went for a walk with a man whose wit is as sharp as his very dapper suit, the fabulous comedian Tom Allen. Along with Tom's hugely successful stand-up career, he's become a hilarious fixture on TV in the last few years. You may have seen him on 8 out of 10 Cats and Mock the Week, and he's also the king of the spin-offs, hosting Bake Off, The Professionals and The Apprentice, You're Fired. Tom loves dogs. He doesn't have a dog himself, so I took him for a stroll with Ray and introduced him to one of my favourite green spaces in the City of London, Postman's Park, which features this really beautiful Victorian set of memorials to everyday heroes. Tom and I chatted about his childhood in Southeast London and how he always felt slightly different to everyone else, his strong work ethic and the awkwardness of being set up on dates with friends. It was such a lovely morning, so much so that I think I may have asked Tom to marry me at one point. I mean, I realise I don't tick the right box on the gender front, but imagine that wedding. Ray in a little bespoke doggy tuxedo. Oh God, I'm getting so excited I'm forgetting about the podcast. I hope you enjoy it. Here's Tom.
I'm going to follow you because you look...
Oh, I look like the sort of person who knows where they're going.
You look so smart today, Tom.
I didn't know what to... What to wear. I've got some meetings after this.
How would you describe your outfit today?
I would describe it as, well, I like to think Prince of Wales chic circa 1936.
Oh.
So that Prince of Wales, yeah.
I'm going to go more specific than that.
Yeah? What are your thoughts?
I'm going to say human rights lawyer.
Oh,
who
okay.
You secretly want to have an affair with.
Thank you. Okay, fine, fine. I don't think I've ever met a human rights lawyer. They're always so busy, aren't they?
They're the dream, aren't they?
They are the dream, but do they make any money? Don't you want like a...
Are they funny as well?
And are they funny? They're going to be have serious and all these sad stories and no bloody dough. Should we go out for dinner? Oh, no, we can't. Because you do everything for free, don't you? It's not very nice,
We're
is
not very PC. So... Free. I've met... Yeah, well, I'm going to describe a bit your outfit. I'm with Tom Allen, I should say.
Yes.
Who's an absolutely brilliant stand-up, presenter, actor.
Well, I've done a bit.
And an actor. And he's wearing a lovely... It's Prince of Wales check, is that right?
I think technically it is, yeah, a Prince of Wales check. And I'm still... It's a new suit, actually.
Yes.
So I'm wearing it... Somebody once gave me the advice, which is never save anything for best. And so I only got this... I saw it. Do you know what? I was doing the T's and C's on Strictly, on the Strictly final.
And the T's and C's is
terms
when
and conditions.
You read out, so they get a guest, yep. Don't they, to
they
read it out.
Get a guest to do it. It had been, the week before was Basil Brush, and the week before that was Angela Rippon.
Okay.
So, I was doing it, sat there with Mum and Dad behind Joe Sugg. He had this lovely suit on. I said, where did you get it? He told me, I won't tell your listeners. he said, Ralph Lauren... And I went there and I bought it because I just wanted to be just like him.
Yeah.
And it was in the sale. So I got, and so I got another one.
Nice shoes.
So I've let
Ray off the lead. I don't know if he's allowed. I better put him on. But we're in a place called Postman's Park, which is in it's sort of Old Street, Central London, isn't it? The city.
Yes. Is it? I would. Say, yeah. It's London Wall.
Barbican. Yeah. Very good.
Barbican. Yeah. It's a beautiful park. I would never have even.
It's tiny, but I think we're both quite bijou, and my dog's bijou.
The dog looks huge in this park. Looks like a Great Dane.
Oh dear.
Already, he's making his mark.
He's done a wee, but Postman's Park is beautiful because come and look at this, Tom.
I'm very impressed. You know all these things. What's this?
This is a memorial to heroic self-sacrificed. And a Victorian artist called George Frederick Watts made all these. And it's the reasons It's what so it's things like people who gave their lives trying to save other people. It's everyday heroes, essentially.
Oh, wow.
It's the pride of Britain, Victorian style.
Yes, it is.
And isn't it lovely? So you can read what they all did.
Position.
Someone from the fire brigade saved six persons from fire in Gray's Inn Road. But they're lovely, and they say his last heroic act, and then they ruin it slightly with the Victorian melodrama by saying he was scorched to death.
Oh, yes, there was a bit of that.
But I find this a good place to come and have a little... I don't know, it's quite peaceful here.
Yes,
I like it.
I like it too. I've never seen this. They're beautiful, for your listeners.
They're
beautiful ceramic... Well, they're tiles,
they're very sort
they?
Of William Morris, aren't they?
Very William Morris. They have beautiful, like floral adornments on either side.
So,
he's got a lovely coat, doesn't he, Ray? Because I love Dodd.
So.
Yeah,
but let's just wander
he's
around.
He's immaculately groomed, with that, with having that coat straight to the floor. It's like he's wearing a lovely, a sort of Tudor dress. Like he's got a bustle on. That's what it looks like. He's got like a maybe it's more of a Victorian look.
He's got a Kardashian bum.
Yeah, he has.
Tell me, what's your relationship with dogs, Tom?
I love them, and I always think I have a special bond with them for no real reason.
Yes.
But I do love them, and I grew up with two Yorkshire Terriers and my parents, but we love them very much, the girls, Zoe and Abby. They had human names at a time when dogs didn't really have human names, and we love them to bits. My mum was always quite reluctant about them, and then when they sadly passed over... When they went for the big walk, Mum was the most devastated of all of us. And now Mum and Dad sometimes look after a dog, and that dog gets a very easy ride. And she, compared to our two, she gets to not just sit on the bed, but like lie on the bed, like she's a human being who gets into bed.
And what's that dog called? And what kind
she's called Bo, and she's a lovely combination of a Chihuahua and a Bichon Frise, which I always think sounds like a lettuce.
He did a circle, and you know what that means?
Oh, it's time. It's time. By somebody's casket.
Oh, dear. That lady looked over. She looked quite sort of no-nonsense, didn't she? And she looked over as if to...
She probably lives in the Barbican.
Yes, I think she does. She looked at me, Tom, as if to say... I hope
you're going to pick that arm.
Yes. And it's all very well chatting to your handsome human rights lawyer partner...
Yeah.
What about the dog's poo?
What about the...
Now we need to find a bin. Come on. There's a little... What's this? This is the museum thing to do with
Is it a museum in here?
Oh, lunchtime talks from the Bible, 1:10. You in?
1:10 to 1:40. That's not very long, is it? It's half an hour.
I mean, that's a lot.
Not going to get through in that. Barely cover Noah in that, will you? Although
we need seven. How long does it take him to create the world? 7 days?
7 days, not half an hour.
So tell me, we're going to go back to your childhood. We can wander out of this park if we feel too enclosed.
No, I'm enjoying just zigzagging around.
We can wander through there.
It's got a lovely flower bed in the middle, which I imagine in spring is very vibrant.
There is
a way that you sort of see in seaside towns like places like Eastbourne.
Yes.
Like lots of marigolds, which I've never really liked, but I think I might start liking.
I quite like marigolds.
Yeah, I think I
like a pansy liking. As well.
Well, you're welcome. Welcome to the show.
tell me about your childhood, Tom.
What do you want to know?
Well, you've told me about the dogs, Abby and Zoe.
Do you know the thing about dogs is they become these. I was always quite nervous of the world. I still am. Obviously, I'm quite nervous of the world. And I think dogs become these receptacles for all our, kind of fear and protection instincts. But a vessel for all this kind of love that we have. The whole family projects all their love on the dog. And I think, I remember our two Yorkshire Terriers, I always felt very protective of. And I was always quite an unusual child, particularly at secondary school, as you can imagine.
Why?
In every way, but sort of not. Like, every way that was kind of... that I think people were like, you could just not be weird. But I'd just be interested in people who no one was interested in. Like, I really loved Noel Coward. I loved Elton John in a way that... Like, now Elton John's quite cool and has been for some time. But when I was about 10, I just got obsessed with him.
And this would have been presumably about...
It's about 1994. I just loved all his old albums, and I loved all the kind of... I suppose it was the big costumes and the big outfits and everything. And then... And so I'd come in and listen to my Elton John records and dance around with the dogs.
And did you have brothers and sisters?
Yes, I have a younger brother, but he's very normal.
What's his name?
James.
James? I think he said yeah. Jones. I thought, he's like a chauffeur. He was your chauffeur. there's the police.
Tom, quick.
He's not on a leave. What if they arrest... Is that police? Their uniforms look different.
It might be City of London Police.
Can we ask them? Ask them about their uniforms. I'm interested. Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Thanks. We're just doing a podcast for The Times. This is my friend Tom Allen, who's a comic. That's my dog Raymond. Yes. We're interested in... Well, Tom, you ask. You're good with authority.
Yeah, you're City of London Police, aren't you?
Yes.
You've got a different
yes,
outfit.
Not the mat. Different.
Oh, it's very nice to meet you. It's really
chat.
Added to our walk.
All right.
Bye, police.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
What
lovely, love you.
What mean lovely it. Police officers.
Aren't they charming?
The one from Essex had lovely teeth.
He was handsome.
I thought he was.
Are you dating at the moment?
No, too scared.
Too
scared?
Should I go after him?
No, but then that's the thing with gays. Although I say that, but nobody else seems to have this problem. It's working out who is one. You know, you can't just go like... So for straight, if I was a straight woman and I saw a bloke, I wouldn't go... I wouldn't be like, oh, I want... Well, no, actually, I know some... This is sometimes the problem for some women that I know who... keep fancying gay men, but I find that if I was to start flirting with them, like, yeah, well, me and my wife, and it would just be awful. Or we'd be like, you know, like, what would I do? Ask him out for a date? You're like, what? It'd be terribly embarrassing.
But I think
you can't just go up to someone and be like, nice to talk to you. Are you gay? No? Okay, bye. Or nice to talk to you. Okay, you are great. Well, now I've asked you such an awkward question.
So tell me, so your childhood, we were talking about, so it I know it's near Wearable Beckett's manor.
It's in the borough of Bromley, London's leafiest borough.
Yeah.
And I grew up there, and it's also where David Bowie grew up. Brixton always claims him, he didn't spend very long there. Bromley was what made him. Bromley is the epitome of polite suburbia, you know, like very polite, essentially boring.
Yeah.
But in a way that actually, as you get older, you go, actually, it's quite a nice form of boring, isn't it? And so I think that fueled a lot of my sense of like, oh, I love Elton John. I like these extravagant people. Just because it's like, oh, you don't have to be kind of constrained and worried about what people think of you and worried about not sticking out and worried about, you know, you can take a step out and be outrageous if you want and flamboyant.
And your mum and dad, names please?
Paul and Irene.
I love an Irene.
Mum doesn't like her name. She doesn't like it.
Does she have a nickname?
No.
Irie, no.
No, she doesn't like any shortening of her name either. Uh-huh. She doesn't like it, but also she doesn't like shortening it.
I feel she knows what she wants, Mrs. Allen.
She does, in a way, yes, she does. I gave her some vouchers for John Lewis to go and buy a new sofa, because they were moaning about the sofa. They got a new sofa. I said, this is lovely. Where is it from? They said, Laura Ashley. So... you know the vouchers are still sat there.
It's those little hacks of microaggressions that I like in family life.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So, and your dad, was he a coach driver?
He was a coach driver. He retired about a year ago. And he worked in the office before he retired. And he worked until, so he was about 78 when he retired. 77 when he retired. He loves being busy. And at the moment, he needs to find something new to do. He needs to get stuff... I don't know. I was thinking of employing him as maybe some sort of personal assistant, but I don't know if that's...
Driver.
As a driver. He loves it.
I think that'd be great.
But I can't sit in the back when it's my dad, can I? This is my car, by the way. This is my dad.
And your mum was... did she work in retail? Why do I think
she that? Did. Yes. Good knowledge. She worked in the Army and Navy in Bromley, now at TK Maxx, much to the chagrin of everybody in the Bromley area. There's no longer an Army and Navy, no longer a House of Fraser, only a TK Maxx, which, as everybody knows, is a bun fight or a bum fight. I never know quite what the expression is.
I remember a friend of mine had made this observation, and I've seen it. He said, I decided never to go in there when I saw someone sweeping up clothes, and I thought, I don't want to buy things.
It's like a jumble sale. I wouldn't go to a church jumble sale and go, that handbag, I'll just buy it. And also I wouldn't go, I don't know what I want today, I just want something. I just I'd go, oh, I need to buy a shirt. Okay, where do I like the shirts from? I'll go there to buy a shirt.
I'm trying to get a sense of your background, because I know you've talked about this a lot in your stand-up, and it's very funny, this thing you talk about, that you sort of came out different, and your voice is even different to your parents,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes. And when I went to school, people were like, why are you talking like that? Why are you talking like that, though? And I'm like, I don't really know. What, do your mum and dad talk like that? No. Why do you talk like that, then? And it's like, all the time having to explain it. And I don't know. And the only reason I've got is to go, well, I'm gay. And then people go like, why does he talk about being gay? It's like, I don't. You just asked me for a reason.
So did you feel when you were growing up with your parents, I get the sense, you know, this sort of Noel Coward stuff and the Elton John, what was their view of that? What, do you think there was disapproval? Or it feels like your parents are quite sort of... They'd be the kind of people that would be quite accepting and tolerant.
They were
otherness. Not that that's other.
I felt very other about it all. They were a bit like, ah, what are you going to put a picture of Elton John up in your room for? Oh, you're going to put a picture of him up? Oh no. Oh, what do you want to? Oh God. I cut pictures of like Elton John out of Sunday supplements and things, and because you couldn't buy, because at that point it was like when Athena was open. Do you remember that?
I had this idea of you going for the Telegraph or the Times, though.
Yes, we sometimes got
that. Smash Hits.
Never Smash Hits. And we did sometimes get the Telegraph when Dennis from next door didn't want it anymore, and we'd get
Dennis.
There. Or if Dennis was away, we'd get, and it was too much bother.
Was Dennis the neighbour everyone aspired to? Was he a bit keeping up with the Joneses, Dennis?
Dennis from Dennis and Jean is in a way, yes, he is very learned, very knowledgeable man. Always challenged, always encouraged discussion and debate in a very intelligent way. Whenever we went round, which I enjoyed, but yes, sort of the otherness of it all was very difficult, because yeah, at that time everybody was like, what are these called, like spliff posters? Do you remember? Like, it would be like the Mona Lisa smoking a spliff. But it was also like that kind of like lad culture, really, which was always so kind of. But again, lad culture was by its nature very just so muted, you know, so kind of like, don't stick out. You wear an Adidas tracksuit, and the most extravagant thing you can have is like some sort of kooky sunglasses,
and a Kangol hat,
Yeah, exactly. And maybe the Levi's advert might be quite. Revealing to you.
Did you always have, because you're a very snappy dresser, and I get the sense it's kind of quite tied up with your, not your identity, but I suppose it is, it's your self-expression. And was that something you always had strong ideas about when you were growing
yes,
up?
Yes, very strong. And I was always obsessed with Victorian clothing, and was desperate to kind of, so I'd go around, and again, this was before it was ever fashionable, or there was ever like steampunk or like vintage or anything. So I'd go around, there was a shop in Victoria called Cornucopia. And yes. There was a shop in Angel called something like The Moon's a Balloon.
Yes.
And then I'd go round, and I'd love to go round there, and I'd go on Saturdays when I was allowed out on my own, I'd go to like Notting Hill, Ladbroke Grove Market, and what was the other one? Sometimes Spitalfields.
And how old were you then? Sort of a young teenager?
Yeah, 14, 15. And I'd go round and I'd go and buy sort of like remnants of like shirts from the First World War and things that still had like D-Mob numbers in them. And my mum would be like, oh, don't buy any of that shit from up there, will you? Come back full of fleas and that. Don't bring it in the house. Don't bring it in the house.
You sound like League of Gentlemen.
They weren't a bit like that. Oh, it's disgusting. And I'd go up there, and it was quite good because I'd go up there and I'd go, he'd want like a tenner for the shirt, and I'd go, will you take £8? I was quite good at haggling with them,
yeah,
for a 14-year-old. And I'd hide my money in my sock because I was so terrified of being mugged.
Did you?
I don't know why I thought I'd be mugged. I mean, I blended in so well.
What a lot of people would do is want the Victorian shirt but feel, I better buy the Kangol hat or the Kappa football jacket because I want to look like everyone else. And the idea as a child, especially a young man, you know, standing out is a nightmare.
Well, I had this thing where I was like, part of me was like, yeah, I could just kind of go, I don't want to stand out, and I'll just buy the Kangol caps and all that. Kappa tracksuits. Poppers on the side. Why did you need to expose the side of your legs? But I just felt very violently, in a way, no, I don't want to do that, you know? And just like, I think you can either go, you come to a fork in the road and you either go, yeah, I'll just blend in, which is effort in itself, or I'll go, basically, up yours to everybody. I'll be who I want to be. And you go, and I think you go extremely the other way. And so you just, and actually people, I think people trust you more then, if you do that, because they go, well, he knows who he is. I don't know why he's dressed like that. But it's like, I mean, I remember like growing up, my mum and dad loved Elton John. But like even people like Boy George as well, who's from South London, you know, a lot of the time you could go, you know, people would be like, ah, why is he dressed like that? Ah, what's Boy George all about? But they're like, well, it's Boy George, and it's like that. And they kind of, I think people do like a bit of extravagance if you give it to them. But you have to do it confidently. You can't ask their permission. You have to just...
Well, I think also what you make an interesting point when you talk about that sort of just decision to just be yourself, essentially. And I know, like, therapists would always say that's about having a very strong sense of self. And some people have that. Some people have to spend a lifetime trying to find it. Whatever.
Do they?
Yeah. I think I did. I think it took me a long time. I think I probably spent up until I was about 40, depressingly, doing what I thought I should do. And it actually took me, in my case, it took a sort of series of personal sort of tragedies, really, for me to... Because that is a wake-up call.
Yeah,
so I think the thing is, some people like you are probably born with that, where you think, oh, well, I'm just going to do what I want. And
but I do think it is I do think it is an endeavour, though.
Really?
I think my like way of dressing strangely or sort of choosing to do a job that's quite odd, in a way... it's my way of doing it, but in other ways, like friends of mine, I was just on holiday with some friends, and they were like, "No, but what do you want to do?" And I'm like, "I don't know," because actually, so much of life is going, you know, from kids, you're like, "Don't behave like that." That's not a nice way to behave, which is correct that we're taught like to behave in a certain way. And in a way, you go to school and you're basically told fit into this track,
yeah,
or we will shout at you. And so it's very difficult to go, I'm just going to do whatever I want. So for me, a day off is kind of quite troubling.
Really?
Did you find?
Have you got quite a strong work ethic?
I like to think so, because I know if I don't, much as I can moan and go, oh, I've got no time for myself, but what I do if I have time for myself, I get spiral into a depression almost immediately. I need to have direction and purpose all the time, otherwise. Otherwise you get lost in your thoughts. And I do think thinking is often a saboteur. You know, the thinking or just sort of like being lost in thought is very damaging for me.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so. Unless you're like Jean-Paul Sartre. Like, what?
You just want to dress like him. You don't want to think like him.
I mean, I don't want to think like him.
Do you, how are you with silence?
You know what? I'm getting better at it. Because I sort of struggle sleeping in a way. I get to sleep and then I wake up and I have anxiety dreams almost every night. I wake up screaming. No, I don't wake up screaming. But I have anxiety
the
dreams.
The lambs, Clarice.
I can still hear the lambs. But I tend to fall asleep listening to audiobooks or podcasts.
Oh. Maybe I can recommend one.
I mean, I don't know if anybody's doing that now. I mean, if they weren't asleep, they will be now. But recently I've been trying not to do that and trying not to listen to music all the time. Because we have it. There's a time when you have to rush home from school, put on your Elton John records and be excited and enjoy listening to it. Go, should I listen to it again? Or maybe I will. And go, oh, is it a bit, if I listen to it again, will the other people in the house be like, oh, not this one again?
So tell me, I want to know, with your mum and dad, at school I'm getting this idea of you in these sort of slightly wild and wonderful clothes and academic or...
Again, yes, very threw myself into my subjects, very studious, very work driven. In a way, I suppose searching for approval, I suppose, but at the same time going, well, I'm at school, so we may as well do this well. And my dad had always said to me, go into it with a good heart. You, like I'd say, I don't like maths. He'd say, you've got to do it. So you can either do it hating it, or you can do it and go with a good heart. And so I did it with a good heart, and actually I was quite good at it. I had a fabulous maths teacher called Mr. Cox. And he was brilliant and managed to pare everything down. Made everything very straightforward. But, you know, good teachers. I had some very good teachers.
And did you... Was coming out something you did?
Comprehensive
school. Or did you... You know, was it like a thing you thought about and gave thought to? Or
no.
Did it just evolve? A lot of your friends say to me it just happened gradually.
For me, I totally knew from the age, I suppose, 11, when I was probably getting obsessed with Elton John and Noel Coward. But totally knew, kind of knew from the age of about 7 or 8. Always knew I was different from the moment I was conscious. But in my teen years, I put it under a rock and put a heavy cooking pot on top of the rock. You know, the way people, or what do they do? Like put a rock on top of a cooking pot? I don't know. I'm trying to think what that image is. Trying to seal the
lid. I'm seeing it all in a big La Cruze.
If only Le Creuset had made it to Bromley in the 90s. It was an inconvenience. I didn't like it. It's very hard to articulate, really. And I think it's kind of bizarre, probably, to a lot of people now, when it's kind of something that's openly discussed and celebrated. Mm. But back then, it was something that wasn't discussed. There was no real access to go to say it's okay. Mm. But at the same time, even if someone had done that, I would have gone, no, it's not. And I think as well, I wanted to go, no, this is my thing. I don't want somebody else telling me how I experience it or how I should feel about it. Yeah. I know I don't like it. Don't tell. You know, it was sort of weird like that. I just can't really explain it.
Yeah.
And it took a long time. It took a lot of... It was only when I left school and I got involved in the National Youth Theatre, and then I was surrounded with a lot of positivity around it. And a lot of positivity generally, and I was like, oh, actually, maybe it is nice to sort of actually feel a bit happy with yourself rather than feel shit all the time.
Let's go up here. This is the podium.
We found our way in. Come on, Ray.
Oh, this is nice and quiet. Your parents were okay with it, were they?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, pretty much. I don't think it was a huge surprise. But then, I don't know if it was or not, really. And I think as well, you know, it's sort of... Again, I think it's quite difficult in our... I say that, I think a lot of people do have experience of it. They were aware that it can pose a more difficult life than perhaps they would have wanted in points. And I think that, at first, made it difficult, but since then, they've been very supportive of, and it's all been great. But I think... Like now, maybe it's different. I don't know. I don't know what it's. I don't know if I always assume it's different. But then I hear from people, and they go, "Oh no, I really relate to that feeling of of people not understanding completely immediately." So we're all loners and weirdos, really.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I want to know when you realised you were funny first. When you first made someone laugh and thought, oh, this is good.
I think I was always kind of... because I always spoke differently. People were like, oh, look at him. Oh, he's funny. Oh, he said the funniest thing.
Maybe we should go down those stairs, Tom. Look. And then we can walk through there to the barbican.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, should we go that way? Can we get...
I'm trying to think what's best for Ray.
Oh, you're so kind.
Will he be all right on those stairs?
He'll be fine. So we were talking about when you were funny.
Well, I don't... Yeah, so
sorry,
I don't
that sounded really rather rude. That one time you were funny.
That one time you did that funny thing. So I don't... I mean, yeah, so I don't know, really. It always felt quite instinctive. Oh, back on concrete.
So come on, tell me about the National Youth Theatre. So you decided to go... Did you want to go to university, or because you obviously
do you know
doing
what?
All
I
right
thought I wanted to go to Cambridge.
I can see
to
there.
Do history, and I could see myself there. And I was very academic, and I studied very hard, and I was very good at it. And then I got there to the interview, and Sarah Pascoe wrote a similar experience, so I thought it was interesting getting there and being so overwhelmed by it. And also, they ask you these questions, and I've not really had any preparation for what that was all about or how you should impress them. And so I just sort of thought, oh, it's just a chat, so I'll just respond as though I'm talking to one of my mum's friends. There's no pressure. And didn't realise, like, actually those questions are like, you've got to answer them in a certain way.
Yeah.
They gave feedback, and they said, he was a very pleasant young man, but did have a tendency to answer the question, to jump in with an answer rather than thinking about what his response was going to be. But then I look back and I think, well, that's what I was taught, you know, to be, like, personable. And to go, if someone asks you a question, answer it. Be confident in your answers. That's nice. That's what you should do. I think if you're a lot more confident, if you're sort of in imbued with that sense of confidence, you go, well, I'll wait a moment, I'll respond when I'm ready. Do you know what I mean?
But also, wouldn't you say it's that very thing which has become a highly useful skill for you? You know, is, I mean, on a panel show, just, you can't sit there and say, don't speak till you're spoken
I think,
to.
Or like,
do you know what I mean?
I think of a sensible thing to say before I respond. Yes.
It's funny, I notice people clocking you. Do you get recognised quite a lot these days, Tom?
I think more so, yeah. But I don't really notice it myself. But if people say hello, I'm always quite delighted. I don't really understand. I mean, it's sort of, it says so much about how needy I am. But I go, oh, somebody, well, they like me, great. I just always, I think it's lovely if people come up and say hello and stuff.
How does it affect
I sometimes have the experience of going, they'll come up and sort of say, oh, hello, I like the thing you did on blah, blah. And then I think the convention is you go, oh, thank you very much, then you sort of walk off. But what I tend to do, because I am A, needy, and B, have a tendency to chat too much.
Hello,
I
children! You see, that's my equivalent of fame.
Well,
look at that dog.
I think in a way you might have seen people clocking me, probably just looking at the dog. But I do have a tendency to just bore people, so I'll start talking to them, and then they go, oh, I've got to go now. And like, of course,
it's
I'm sorry.
When, you know, it's when someone says, oh, can I have a selfie? And then it ends with them saying, anyway, you must be getting on.
They literally do that.
And how did you find drama school, Tom, just to go back?
So I didn't go to drama school.
Oh, no, it was
involved in the
youth
National
theatre.
Youth Theatre.
Yeah. Was that... So,
so
you
didn't,
go
get
to
into
university.
Cambridge, I was like, no, I don't want to go to university.
Yeah.
And again, I sort of had this kind of contrarian attitude towards everything and just sort of was like, well, I'm supposed to go to university now, but I don't want to go, so yeah. I'm not going to go. And my dad was really upset because, you know, no one in our family had gone to university. And but I just sort of felt like, oh, I don't really want to go away from home. Isn't that ridiculous?
What is that? That's interesting, that pull of home to you that still is there, and I'm wondering what that is. It's quite sweet,
yeah.
Actually.
Well...
It feels safe to you, doesn't it? I wonder
yes.
if you're a big... I always felt that with my family. That I was... I suppose if you're a big personality, it's quite nice to have a dock. You need a dock,
yeah.
You know, where you can come home and
yes.
feel... I'm going to go out and be big, and then I can come home and just sort of retreat a bit.
I think so. Well, I haven't always lived at home. I moved back when I was about 30, so 6 years ago. And at that point, I just felt very, like, I felt very frustrated about, I didn't know what I was doing in my work and in my life. I didn't know what I was doing. And when I was spending time at home, I just felt grounded, you know, and supported and stuff in a way that I didn't feel when I was... when I was sort of living on my own or living with friends and stuff. Basically, my thing is, I still live at home, and I'm so indecisive. People go, "Have you worked out where? Have you moved out yet?" And I'm like, "No," and because most of the time I don't know where I want to live. And then part of me thinks, should I just try and buy the house next door to my mum and dad or something, or you know, like, or buy my mum and dad's house? They like that idea, and then do it because that's very mid-century, very 60s their house, and that I think could look great. But then I'm like, well then. I'll just be living in your house. And they're like, yeah, it'll be fine. And then we can... And I'm like, yeah, but I can't buy it.
But you've got some good stand-up out of living at home. Because you did a whole show, didn't you, dedicated to... you did a tour. I mean, that was...
My whole life.
So, do you want kids, by the way?
No. I don't know. Do you know, again, not to sound all maudlin and self-pitying, but I do sound self-pitying and maudlin. It was never presented as an option, so it's never been part of the list of life things. Maybe I've changed my mind.
But I suppose it is now, isn't it? But that's only quite a recent development, isn't
it's
it?
In the last 5-10 years. But then I know lots of gay people who go, oh yeah, I want to have kids, and I'm like, well, when did you even? But then some people just do, don't they? Or they have lots of kids around them growing up, which.
Oh, Tom, I don't think we can get into this bit.
We can jump through the bamboos.
Shall we?
We could jump through the bamboo.
Let's do it. Which, I mean... Oh, Tom, I don't...
It's a very strong plant.
Do you think we'll make it? I think we can do it. Look, you just do this, Tom.
There we go. Oh, well done. Oh, there we go. Oh, well done.
We're in the bottom.
We're through. We made it through. I'm not wearing my best brogue.
No,
so
I don't
fine.
Want you to go on the green because I don't want you. Let's go on the path,
we're on the
Tom.
Green, I think.
Look at this beautiful old ruin.
Please don't refer to me like that. Oh, look at that. It is amazing, isn't it?
Central London.
Is it depressing, though? Is it depressing, the Barbican? Because that's what I think. If I move out, I want to feel like I'm in a community. I want to feel like there's lots going on. I'm convenient to places.
Oh, Tom, this is so wrong for your shoes.
And miss my mother.
Aunt father.
But at the same time...
You can't go in.
It's fine. I told you, I'm wearing my old wingtips.
You're wearing... There's some lovely... they're a brogue, aren't they?
They are a wingtip brogue.
Hello!
No fishing, it says here, as we approach the lake.
You see, what I did with that man is how I approach life.
That is very... I noticed it,
did
too.
Did you see that?
Just slightly abrasively say hello to people, and they won't question it.
My parents always taught me that.
That is a good skill.
Just always act as if you're entitled to be at the table.
And it's such a good... Yes. And what a good lesson.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
Do you act like that in life?
When I do, I feel very empowered. But sometimes I question it and then it all falls down. But again, you can't question it. You just have to go, yes, I'm here.
Oh, well, now we're trapped on.
Now we're actually trapped here.
We've only got one way out. We're going to have to swim.
Look at it, though. It is extraordinary.
Do you see? So do you want to explain what it is? It's like a beautiful
lake, I forget we're on a podcast.
Yeah.
We're sort of at the end of... We're in a sort of dystopian, sort of Clockwork Orange-esque concrete...
It's brutalism,
brutalist bridge. Yeah. Next to a Roman wall. I imagine Roman. Is it a bit snooty? And is it a bit like, you know, people who used to go to the RSC all the time...
How dare you?
Sorry. Other people. People, you know, people who you'd kind of, you know, you just want to have an ordinary conversation about bins and they want to tell you about how they went to see Nicholas Nickleby back in 1982.
Story of my life. You went to the National Youth Theatre. You did some acting.
I did a bit. I've said it before. I thought I wanted to be an actor. Then it turned out I was just gay. And, I did like it, but you know, I sort of thought getting involved in theatre would mean I'd meet lots and lots of gay people. But actually, in truth, I didn't. And that is down to two things. One, a misplaced assumption that theatre is full of gay people.
Yeah.
Which at that point it wasn't. It was more full of people who were just... quite a lot of lads, actually. That is also true. Also, I think there were quite a lot of gay people, but they did not want to interact with me. So there are two truths existing there. Or another staircase I could live on.
It is quite dystopian, isn't it?
It is a little bit dystopian, but I think
I like that,
maybe
though.
Grow to like it.
Yeah?
Or would I get annoyed with it? You see, the thing is, I get annoyed quite easily.
You don't strike me that you do. You strike even-tempered type.
I bottle it all up, don't I?
Do you?
Yes. Oh, yes. It'll be a huge breakdown at some stage. But that'll be the book that sustains me probably into old age, and then I'll die. That's the plan, anyway. It's good to have a plan. What's your 5-year plan?
When was your first stand-up gig, Tom?
When I was about 21,
yeah.
And I was working at the National Youth Theatre's office.
Yeah.
And some friends of mine, a few people I was working with, said, why don't you have a go at stand-up? One of them was Charlie Baker, who is a stand-up now. And... he said, why don't you have a go? And I thought it was such a ridiculous thing to do.
Yeah.
I like sort of brazen
this
things
way, Tom,
like that.
Silk Street.
Exit to Silk Street.
So go on, your first gig, Tom, come on.
Oh yeah, so they said, why don't you have a go? And I like the sort of brazenness of it. I like doing something and going, well... And I was feeling very frustrated at trying to be an actor.
Yeah.
Because you're always at the beck and call of other people. And basically the world of acting a lot of the time just wants posh people.
Of course.
And posh, striking-looking men. And and so I felt annoyed about that. And then I kind of liked the audacity of it. And again, at that point, I felt like a very blokey world. There weren't really any...
Yeah.
There wasn't the sort of alternative scene. Stand-up wasn't like a forum, as it's sort of become now, for lots of different voices. It felt very... And as a sort of response to it not being very... seemingly very welcome. I kind of like the idea of sort of bounding into it. Anyway, I did a set and it was terrifying, but I got through it and then I was quite proud of myself. And I did another set and then that was done.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I've done that now. I don't need to worry about it anymore. And
did you feel scared though? Yeah.
Yeah, horribly so. And then I thought I better... I did some newcomer competitions, which I then won.
So you think you're funny, you want?
Yeah.
You?
And that was nice, but in a way it was kind of... It made it even more terrifying, because then people were like, oh, you're good then, are you? I suppose, because you won the competition. You better be good. And then, of course, I'd go on and be absolutely rubbish. So I've been doing it for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I wish someone had just said to me, like, do you know what? It takes... Do you know the person who says this? This is Frank Skinner. He says it takes 10 years. You do it 10 years, and then you start to get good.
Really?
And that was definitely the case. At least 10 years, yeah. Maybe more.
Did you have comics like? Were you aware of? Did you watch people like Frank or other comics, or did you sort
no,
of?
No, because all that sort of stand up was all really in live environments, and I was a kid, so
yeah.
You know, we wouldn't go to like up the watch out. We wouldn't go to like up the creek comedy
no.
club. As a family.
And it's not something your parents were... Look at all
well, my mum and dad... My mum loves comedy. What? And so I was always brought up watching comedy, but not stand-up per se.
What did she like?
So we would... Like, mum and I would always watch Victoria Wood and love Victoria Wood and French and Saunders, and I'd be allowed to stay up late on a Thursday night to watch Bottom and then Abfab. But before that, like, even as a small child, I'd be obsessed with... Spitting Image and then the two Ronnies, and Mum would tape all these things for me, and the Pink Panther films and One Foot in the Grave. You know, I'd be obsessed with all these sitcoms and sketch shows, anything. Russ Abbott I loved, anything. I don't know why, I just loved comedy.
Yeah.
But it wasn't in the stand-up sense, really. It wasn't in, and even Victoria Wood, I suppose, even though, as Stuart Lee says, she was perhaps the first alternative comedian in the UK, it was very alternative. And so when I was then trying to do stand-up in clubs, it wasn't very forthcoming, wasn't very welcoming to the idea of someone, this like 22-year-old gay posh boy who didn't seem to be that posh.
Did you make that part of your act in terms of, did you talk about your sexuality?
No. And then somebody went, well, I think he's gay. And then I realised, and I consciously didn't mention it until sort of near the end, but then you realise people sometimes in... audiences, it seemed, needed to have
this
weren't
way.
Comfortable until I said it.
Really?
Because they go, what are you? They want to go, what are you? But it's the same when I was a kid, they're like, why do you speak like that? Why do you speak like that? So then I realised you had to sort of set out a stall where you go, I am this, this and this.
Yeah.
And then actually that made it a lot more accessible for people.
Yes.
To then talk about whatever I wanted to talk about. But they had to go, well, who are you? Which is very, you know, and actually I understood that quite quickly, because I suppose where I was from and sort of school experience I'd had.
They sort of want to say to themselves, well, he might be one of them, but he's all right.
Yes,
they
want you to be on their terms, I suppose.
Yeah.
I say, who, they? Who are these they? I mean,
they, I suppose, are people who would, might be wary or fearful, often through no fault of their own, just through conditioning,
yeah.
of people that aren't don't belong to a similar tribe.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And people are fearful and judgy.
And did you talked when you were first, because then your career sort of, it feels like it was really quick to me. It feels like you were suddenly everywhere. I'm sure it didn't feel that way
well,
to you.
I've been a stand-up 15 years.
All over this.
And it's only in the last sort of 2 years, I suppose, that I've been on things. But I think people are like, oh, he's everywhere. I can't stand him. Oh, it's too, oh, him again. And, I mean, really, I'm just doing it to try and make up to my parents to go, look, see.
Do you think that is genuinely what motivates a lot of comics?
Ken Dodd said, he said, I still feel like I'm performing to my parents across the coffee table in the sitting room.
And what do that, you think?
And I think, yes, it probably is true, really. It's not about approval per se, but I suppose it's about validation or sort of going... ultimately, you do want to fit in, don't you? Even if you are unusual.
Yeah.
And different. You still want, on some level, to feel that human validation, that connection that goes, yes, still all right, aren't I? Still all right.
Some people say... Actually, I'm going to quote you. There's something that F. Scott Fitzgerald says.
Oh.
And he always said, the sign of good parenting is... the child has no desire to be famous.
Oh, sorry, Mum and Dad.
And I'm, no, well, I, you know, anyone who performs or does anything with a profile, but that's why I find it interesting to examine that I think, what does that mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
I look at you and your background seems absolutely grounded. And but I suppose you did have that sense of being other, as you've said, and that's possibly what drove you.
Yes, I suppose it's that really, and I think it was beyond my mum and dad's control.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and so it was sort of feeling different. I suppose I just sort of either had to find a way to not be different or to be really different and make that acceptable.
And what did... Because as your career started, you know, you'd start... I was really conscious of you. I'd think, oh, he's a, you know, you'd mock the week and 8 out of 10 cats.
Well, that was much later on. That was never at the start of my career.
Yeah, that was
sort of 12, 13 years in.
And once you'd done all that, did you start to feel, right, I've learned my trade and I'm confident enough that I've done enough gigs?
Ostensibly, I can see that.
Yeah.
And I've always... I took the attitude of like, every gig I'm offered, I will say yes to.
Do you?
And I still sort of do that. And so I go, because I thought, sort of think, well, I want to try and suppress those demonic voices in my head that go, no, you can't do this. No, this isn't for you.
Do you have those, Tom?
Oh, yeah, and more, as much now as ever.
I can't ever imagine you having those.
Well,
but I suppose we never can about other people, can we?
No.
You seem very sunshine rather than showers.
Oh, good.
Do you have showers, though?
Oh, yeah, most of the time.
I wasn't commenting on your personal hygiene.
Well, no, sure.
Do you have shower days as well as sunshine days?
I mean, sure, usually on the same day, which, of course, generates a rainbow.
You mean you have sort of... Your emotions are kind of up and down, not in a sort of, I'm not saying your mental health issue way, but I'm just saying...
Oh, no, I mean, I think it's always, I think it is for a lot of people, maybe okay, all people. It is always a feeling of going, oh, being happy, but also trying to weather the, like I say,
yes.
the negative voices in one's head or the
yes.
kind of fears and anxieties that... human beings naturally have, I suppose, because a friend of mine pointed out that actually we all have these feelings because that's what that's how human beings have managed to evolve and sustain, is because they preempted threats.
Yes, it's predators, isn't it? And actually our feelings are evolved for a sort of more primal environment.
Yes,
and so what
not a pret-a-manger. More the savannah.
That's what it is, though.
Yeah.
You've obviously... I love you on... You carved out quite a niche for doing this sort of... You called it the bitchy younger sister or older sister when you did Bake Off the Professionals, didn't you?
Yeah, the bitchy older sister of Bake Off, yeah.
Yeah. But really making those shows your own and giving them a really strong identity, because you did The Apprentice, You're Fired as well, which I love.
Oh, thank you for saying that.
It got me back into watching The Apprentice again.
Oh, that's lovely of you to say.
And it made me laugh so much.
Oh, that's lovely.
So...
We had fun doing that.
Do you enjoy hosting? Or?
Yeah, I really do. And, like, I always loved... I've always wanted to do television, really.
Yeah.
And I think that there were times when... There were times as well, I think sometimes if you think you want to be an actor and you surround yourself with theatre people, they're very snobby about a lot of art forms. And actually, what I love about television is I think it's so creative.
Yeah.
And I think it's so intelligent because you have to find ways to connect with people on all different ways in different environments. I think it's... I've always really loved it.
You're very good at it.
Oh, well, thank
you. There's no Mr. Tom, then?
No other half?
No.
No, I don't think I'm the type people fancy. No, that's very needy. Please don't respond to that. It doesn't deserve it. That is absolutely unbearable that I just said. Unbearably needy
and fishing
for compliments.
What do you like in relationships?
Well, I've never really been in one.
Really?
So, and again, I sort of used to think that was odd. Like, I sometimes go on holiday on my own, and I used to think that was odd. And then you meet, as you get older, you go, oh, there's lots of people like that.
Like your life's in abeyance.
Yeah.
Waiting for this person. And you think...
It's that messaging is so strong as well. It's really hard to... No.
I don't think people believe you, though. I think they think, they're trying to make the best of it. But I think it's that idea that, well, this is what I do, and this is what we all do. So how can you be happy with something different? And I think sometimes people see it as less than rather than just other and different.
Well, I think I'd be quite scared as well of, like, at this point, of, like, somebody else coming in, taking over my stuff, just using up my time. All that downtime I might quite enjoy, just looking out the window. Suddenly I've got to talk to them.
Do you date? You must get a lot of offers, especially
No,
these
no
days.
Dates. No, I don't get any offers.
You do?
Not really. I guess I've always struggled to meet people.
Do you have friends setting you up?
Not really, because I think they know better than to do that. Because they know that they'll be disappointed. That's the thing, when friends set you up, they go, and how did you get on? How'd you get on?
Oh.
You go, well, I hated them, of course. And they're like, oh, but I thought, and this is, I don't need the pressure of, like, it's enough pressure when it's you and another person to see, will you get on? I mean, it's such a sort of contrived situation anyway. And then it's even more contrived to have, like, a friend waiting for feedback. I'm very defensive, I think, aren't I? I think I'm probably codependent.
Do you think so?
That's what a therapist once told me. I still don't know what it means, and I've read all sorts of books about it.
I do. But I don't... What do you mean codependent? On your...
As
maybe
in...
Your, maybe
because,
your codep-
because if you read books about codependency, actually, it's all about sort of like, oh, you had a partner who was an alcoholic, and
yeah.
you... And that confused your sense of what validates you. And I'm like, oh, I've never had that. But I think codependent in the sense that I base my esteem on other people's response. Is that codependency? I don't know. So I think I'm in a relationship...
Codependency is essentially excessive emotional reliance on someone else. And that could be a friend, that could be a loved one. What it means in relationships, I think, is that you struggle to keep your own identity.
Right. Well, I think I have elements of that.
Yeah.
And I think whenever I've dated someone and it's gone wrong, I've taken it very personally, and I think that's probably a sign of being quite codependent, maybe.
Yeah.
In that, like, I can't go... You know, I think cool people who are always in relationships are like, I'm fine. If I'm dating this person, that's fine. If I'm not dating them, I'm still fine. It's just me. Whereas I'm like, what? If I'm dating somebody and then they just, like... reject me, then it's like, it's not just like, oh, I don't know if we're compatible. It's like, oh, like to my existential soul, you and the world rejects me, and I therefore reject myself.
Yeah.
And I think that's not good. Then that makes it difficult, I think, to then be...
This one, Tom, is it? Yeah.
Yeah, out there.
It's always when that people will turn around and say, well, yeah, we were on a break, and then they slept with someone else.
I'm yes! Like, and I would be like, I would die.
So would I.
I would be like, I'd be like, 2 years, therapy, right there. But yeah, those people who are like really calm about it. Or like, you know what, we broke up, and... they're seeing somebody else now, and I'm just so happy for them, and I'm going to their wedding, like, like, they broke up with me, I can never see them again, and even the mention of their name will crush me to my soul.
Producer's nodding, nodding.
So I'm not such a weirdo.
Excuse me?
Okay, we're
it's
all weirdos.
It's the only sane response.
Right. Oh, and sorry, I just got to do up my shoelace.
Oh, yeah. I love your man bag.
A kind of clutch.
What I'm thinking, Tom, is that you dress beautifully, you're so well-mannered, Raymond loves you, you've got the same attitude as me for relationships. Do you see where I'm going with this?
You want to get married? Okay, let's do it. We're coming on to a church.
I mean, and also, what would be great is we wouldn't have that issue over the, oh, I met someone else, because
like, of course
there'd be no sexual jealousy.
Yeah. Hi. How are you?
Yeah, good, you?
Yeah, great, great,
you're
thanks.
Coming to...
Yeah?
Wedding.
Yeah, yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
Good.
Just on my way to it now.
Good.
I have no idea who that was.
You're coming to the wedding.
I don't know.
And
that
you
was.
Said I'm on my way to it now.
Absolutely no
you
idea
just
who
told
she is.
Lie.
I have no idea who it was. What would you
what
do?
What would you do? She said, are you coming to the
I did recognise her.
And then she pauses at the wedding. But what then, about, yeah, but why did you say I'm just on my way to it now?
What else could I have said?
You could have said yes.
I could have said.
Because she looked at you like, there is the wedding, isn't now? It could be in 3 weeks, the wedding.
Oh, yeah, that was fraud. And that's why I said it with a smile. So people were like, who was that? Hopefully I'll get a tweet later.
I mean...
I don't remember people's faces. That's another thing.
Do you?
I think there's people in the world I'm just like, wipe. At the end of the day, I'm like, wipe them from my mind, wipe them from my mind.
Tom, I've never... Well, that's because that's our relationship attitude. We'll cross the road now. Oh, Tom, I've really loved our walk. I hope I haven't bored you to death. Oh, bored me? I mean, you're absolutely fabulous.
Well, that's
to coin a phrase.
Of you to say.
Can I just say, I'd like to come and see you live, though. So
people sometimes tweet me that. And the problem is that live is also pronounced live. And so people often say, I'd love to see you live. Which does sound threatening.
Your tour, then, is that...
I'm hoping to go on tour next year, so 2021.
Oh, OK.
So, yes, because I was... In a way, I would like to have done it this year, but... I would hate to rush writing the show, and I think it's important to do some living.
Yeah.
And I think, frankly, if people have seen me before and they come back to see me and I'm still saying, so I live at home with my mum and dad.
No, you'll have moved by then. This is nice, grub on the green.
Yeah, it's nice.
Maybe that's where the wedding is.
Maybe that is where the wedding is. That would be nice.
So, do you think, having spent time with Ray, I mean, it's not really your standard big Labrador. What dog, if you were going to get a dog, Tom, what would you go for, do you think?
I've always thought a Border Terrier, you know, the wiry ones.
Are those what you have growing up then? No,
Yorkies.
Oh, Yorkies, yeah.
But I love them all, really. And
do you?
Do you know, I did some filming about a year ago at Edinburgh Dog and Cat Home. And never go to a dog and cat home because it's not heartbreaking because it's not an unhappy... You know, like, everybody works there who loves the dogs.
Yeah.
But they show you the dogs. And they get you to meet them. And we did this one with this one called Diesel.
Oh.
It was an English Bull Terrier, like Bullseye. Which is always a breed I've thought, oh, it's not a very attractive breed. But, you know, he was so lovely. And he'd had a troubled time. So he was in the orphanage. And he was so boundy. Like... But I loved him, and we really got on. And they were like, could you find a home for Diesel, do you think? He seems to like you. And I was like, maybe I can. And it was like, it would have been the most impractical dog.
I like Diesel. He sounds like a bit of a sort of leather queen as well.
I know. It would have been a great dog for me, wouldn't it? He was so boundy. You know those sort of terrier dogs who are, like, very strong?
Yes.
So, like, didn't realise his strength, bound all over you. It's like being punched all the time. And was very, like, wanted to sort of bite you in a playful way.
I know that. It's like little legs, like little
like punchy
Mike
legs.
Tyson legs.
Yeah.
And, stocky legs.
And also wasn't good with other dogs, wasn't good with around children, couldn't be left on his own. Like, but still I was like, maybe there's a way I can I can make this work. Like, can you imagine?
Sorry.
Like, even trying to...
Well, I hope you get a dog.
I hope so, too.
I hope we can see each other again. I really like you. I didn't often do this. I did it once before to Greg Davis, and I'm afraid it didn't really go
what
anywhere.
Happened?
But I'd really like to be your friend.
Emma, please, any time.
That's what Greg Davis said. Do you know how many times he's called?
Well, I don't know.
Zero.
Oh, well...
Can you improve on that?
Probably. When I move to the Barbican, you can come around all the time.
Well, we're friends now, whether you like it or not. Give Ray a hug.
Ray, lovely to see you. Oh... So lovely. Lovely to see you.
Tom, I really enjoyed our walk.
Well, I hope it's useful for your needs. And and thank you for getting me here in such good time. We've had a lovely walk. We haven't been rained on.
Go into your office. Which
That's
one
not
is
where
it?
I'm going.
No.
That clearly is condemned building.
I really hope you enjoyed listening to that. And do remember to rate, review and subscribe on iTunes.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.